Sheriff Bob Gualtieri was appointed Pinellas County Sheriff by the governor in November 2011 and elected to his first term of Pinellas County Sheriff in November 2012. Began his career in the sheriff's office over 30 years ago. He doesn't even look old enough, does he? And served in three major bureaus, the patrol operations, the investigative operations, and detention and corrections. He became certified as a law enforcement officer and left the sheriff's department for about a year and worked in Dunedin. Then he came back and he worked in narcotics, investigations, and conducted international and domestic drug and money laundering investigations, became an expert in electronic surveillance. Sheriff Gualtieri is kind of a homegrown boy. He became, he got his bachelor's degree at Eckerd College here in St. Pete, not here in St. Pete, over there in St. Pete. And in 1998, he left the sheriff's office to work on his law degree, which he got at Stetson, graduate cum laude, and joined the Tampa law firm of Ford and Harrison, LLP, in private practice. Then he returned to the sheriff's department in 2006 as general counsel and was appointed chief deputy second in command by Sheriff Coates in January 2008. He's participated in many community affiliations, and on his website he lists the Pinellas County Education Foundation, the Pinellas Homeless Leadership Board, the Pinellas Police Activity League, but you know, he doesn't list Tiger Bay, and he's on the Tiger Bay Board. Isn't that amazing? When I talked to the sheriff, I asked him when he was running for office last time why he didn't tout the fact that he's been very involved with the Homeless Coalition and with Pinellas Safe Harbor. And he said to me, well, you know, I'm a Republican. Okay. In fact, he's done a pretty good job there. He's also, I think, a pretty straight shooter. When the headlines come out that he has to investigate in-custody deaths of two individuals, and he just does those investigations and says, yep, we're going to look at them. One of the things that the sheriff does have is he has an 8-year-old at home, he tells us, that kind of runs the roost, and a couple of adult kids. And he also has 4 dogs, 4 cats, 2 rabbits, 6 guinea pigs, and a bunch of fish that he couldn't count. So with that, I introduce you to Sheriff Gualtieri.
Thanks, Linda. And I don't really have them. My daughter and wife have them, and I have them begrudgingly. But we've got them, and they definitely run the household. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be at Tiger Bay here today, and I want to take a few minutes and just kind of talk to you about the sheriff's office itself and some of the things that are going on, and then open it up, of course, to the questions. And I think I'm going to leave the hard issues for the questions. I just want to give you an overview of what's going on in the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. I think a good starting place is what the sheriff's office is all about here in Pinellas County and across Florida, and things you need to know about it. First and foremost, the thing that you need to know about it is that it is an independent constitutional office. The sheriff is an independent constitutional officer, only answers to you. I don't work for the Board of County Commissioners, I don't work for the county administrator, I don't work for the governor, I work for the citizens of Pinellas County, and the sheriff is only answerable to the citizens. It's an office that has, in my view, a tremendous amount of responsibility, and where goes responsibility goes accountability, and that is something that we have made sure that we've instilled within the sheriff's office. There are 3,080 sheriff's offices across the United States. And the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office is the 15th largest out of those 3,080. We also run the 28th largest jail system in the United States. A lot of good things happen within the Sheriff's Office, and sometimes we have some bumps in the road, but we accept responsibility for those and move on. But we are recognized nationwide. We are triple accredited in corrections, in correctional health care, and in law enforcement. And less than 1% Less than 1% of all the sheriff's offices across the country have that distinction of being triple accredited. The challenges that we've had in the last few years have largely focused, as they have for many of you, on the economy and the economic downturn. We've had budget woes. We cut over 600 positions over a four-year period. We cut our budget by $100 million. But what is very important, I think, to the citizens of Pinellas County, and this goes to the dedicated members of the Sheriff's Office, during that same time where we cut $100 million and where we cut 600 positions, for the last 4 years in a row, crime is down in our service area by over 20%. So we're making do, and we're doing more with less, and the job is getting done to make sure that Pinellas County stays a safe place to live and to work. We have probably the biggest challenge we have right now is coming out of the economic downturn is we've had a lot of attrition with retirements and trying to hire and get people hired as quickly as we can on the street. We're competing against a lot of law enforcement agencies around the country for that. So as far as the office goes itself, again, and how we're dividing our responsibilities, is on the law enforcement side, most of you know, there are 24 different cities in Pinellas County. In our primary service area, our primary area of responsibility is unincorporated Pinellas County, and 13 of Pinellas's 24 cities don't have their own police department. They contract with the sheriff's office to be their service provider. And on the detention and correction side, of course, the sheriff is the only one in the county that operates a county jail right here on 49th Street. We have an average daily population of about 3,000 inmates in the Pinellas County Jail. It costs you about $105 a day to house somebody in the Pinellas County Jail. The average length of stay of an inmate in the county jail is about 23 days. The majority of the population are those that we call pretrial detainees, and that means people that have been arrested, but their case has not been disposed of by the courts. They haven't gone to trial. They haven't been convicted of anything. They've been charged with something, but they're being held waiting disposition of their case. We also have about 400 people a day that we house at Pinellas Safe Harbor. Safe Harbor opened a couple of years ago as a jail diversion program because what we saw were people who were coming in and out of the criminal justice system on a revolving door basis on minor crimes, social crimes related to their homelessness. And it didn't make any sense to have those people going through the criminal justice system, being housed in the county jail at $105 a day, getting little services and doing nothing to break that cycle of homelessness. So we opened Pinellas Safe Harbor. Again, we house about 400 people a day there as an average daily population, and it costs about $13 a day out of the sheriff's budget to house them at Safe Harbor. So however you do the math and whatever calculator you use, $13 a day is a lot cheaper than $105 a day. And importantly, is that we're making great strides in getting those individual services to break that cycle of homelessness so that the criminal justice system is not being used as a dumping ground to solve a social problem, because that's what was being done. And so we can do better in this community than having people sleeping on cardboard boxes on street corners, and we can do better than using the jail and the criminal justice system as a place to deal with that problem, because it's not solving the problem, it's actually making the problem worse. So Pinellas Safe Harbor is something that I feel very strongly about. Jail diversion is something I feel very strongly about. And again, another challenge we have is managing that jail population. I told you that we have about 3,000 inmates, and that's about all we can handle at the jail. So it's important that we do everything we can with jail diversion and to reduce recidivism and jail programs and those things that we can do to keep people out of the criminal justice system, the life skills programs, alcohol treatment, mental health treatment. All of those programs are very important. And successful reentry is public safety at its finest. If people get out of the jail, they get out of that criminal justice system, and they don't reoffend, that means they're not out there committing robberies and burglaries and thefts and affecting you and your neighborhoods and our community and causing public safety issues. So it's very important that we run these programs. And sometimes people criticize the programs as being something that's too soft, it's too warm and fuzzy. But the reality is they're important. I strongly believe in them and will continue to do everything I can to make sure that we have effective programs in place in Pinellas County to keep recidivism as low as we possibly can. We recently took over about a month ago also administering misdemeanor probation here in Pinellas County. And for many years, probably about 30 years, There's a contract between the county and Salvation Army to do probation and supervise those individuals that the courts had sentenced to probation. And we took it over about a month ago. We're making a lot of changes with it and for the better to help those individuals successfully complete probation. And we're supervising about 3,000 people in Pinellas County that are on misdemeanor probation. So between the 3,000 in the jail, the 400 at Safe Harbor, and the 3,000 on probation, there's a lot of people out there that are under supervision by the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. The last major area of responsibility we have is judicial operations. There's 5 courthouses in Pinellas County, about 50 sitting judges, and we serve tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of papers that come out of the court system every single year in various forms of court orders and writs and evictions and Baker Acts and you name it. And that's all the responsibility of the sheriff to serve. You saw some discussion, I'll say, in the media probably earlier this year and last year about the number of warrants that we had. One of the things that we had to do, and you got to make tough decisions. When you cut $108 million from a budget, you cut 600 positions, there is no easy way to do that. It is a hard decision when you look at individual programs. One of the things we had to do during that time was to eliminate our warrants unit. And we had about 55,000 warrants that we held for individuals' arrests. Earlier this year, as we're starting to turn the corner, we were able to bring back a violent offender warrant unit, and working with the other criminal justice system stakeholders, the courts, the state attorney, and others, we've been able now to reduce the number of warrants we hold down to about 41,000. So we're making progress with it. We do have a unit of 6 deputies that are focused on picking up people who have violent warrants for robberies, sexual assaults, and other serious crime, child porn, those types of things, so that we're actively working to try and get those people picked up across the streets or off the streets here and across Pinellas County. So challenges-wise, as far as from a public safety perspective, I told you one of the biggest challenges we have right now is hiring. It takes us from the time we hire somebody, put them through the police academy, put them through field training, and they hit the streets solo on their own as a deputy sheriff here in Pinellas County. It takes about a year. And so it's a long time. If we can hire certified people from other agencies, it still takes us about 6-7 months before they become useful to us. We're competing against a lot of other agencies, and one of the biggest challenges we have is that our salary has not kept pace. The Pinellas County Sheriff's Office used to be, and I think should be, one of the highest paid agencies in the county, but we're not now. Our starting pay is $41,000. St. Pete, Clearwater, Tampa, and others are starting several thousand dollars a year more than what we are. So we're working with the county commission, working with the county administrator. For the first time in 5 years, we were able to give our folks a raise this year. They got a 4% increase, but it still hasn't made them whole because they have experienced a net decrease in their take-home pay. Because during that period of time, they had to contribute 3% to their pension with the FRS. They had to contribute more to Social Security, and there's been an increase in health plan contribution costs. So most people have experienced a net decrease of over 5% in pay, and now we're just able to give them a 4% increase. So we're not keeping pace. In other agencies and city police departments, largely because of unions and collective bargaining agreements and those obligations, they've been able to give raises the last few years. So it makes recruiting very, very difficult. From a public safety perspective, I've talked to you about a challenge of managing the jail population that's very important. Another big issue that still remains for us is the prescription drug abuse epidemic. Please, please, make no mistake about it. That problem is not behind us. It is still a very serious problem in our community. We have seen a decrease in the number of deaths in Pinellas County attributed to oxycodone, oxycontin, prescription drug abuse, but it's not behind us. Sometimes we tend as a society to have short memories and we're not hearing as much about it. And it's probably a good thing that we're not hearing as much about it, but it is not a solved problem. It still affects people every single day throughout this county. One of the things that's very troubling that we're seeing a big uptick in is an increase in individuals who are using the internet to download very, very hardcore child pornography. We have a couple of detectives now that are dedicated to that, and unfortunately, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. the number of people that are out there that are doing it. And I'm not talking about somebody who just goes on the internet and goes to some porn site. I'm talking about the hardcore file sharers of really young child pornography. And so we're focused on that. You'll see a lot more cases being made of those individuals, and that's a big problem. And what goes hand in hand probably with some of that is human trafficking, and it especially as it relates to young girls who are in the sex trade, working in, whether it's the topless clubs or whether it's massage parlors or a bunch of different places, 14, 15-year-olds that are being prostituted, and go to a website called Backpage.com, and you'll see them all advertised on there, and it is a big problem and becoming more and more of a problem. This summer, I announced the formation of a special victims unit within the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office that's focusing on that. Again, because of staffing, we've had to ramp it up. It's not fully operational yet, but they're investigating some cases and making some headway. But we're dedicated and are going to continue to dedicate resources to that. Some of the cutting edge stuff in law enforcement is, and we're going to focus on moving ahead in this direction, has to do with more proactive policing, what's called predictive policing and predictive analytics, using algorithms and past history to try and predict where crime may occur in the future. And one initiative that we're going to look at is establishing what's called a real-time crime center, which increases situational awareness so that as the deputies are responding to calls, they get information real-time as to what they're going into. So if they're going to a domestic and the person has a history of being violent with law enforcement, has a history of guns, firearms, or other things they need to know as they're responding to that call, they get it real-time as they're responding. So those are some of the cutting-edge technological things. We're still very, very much here in Pinellas County on the forefront nationwide in facial recognition. I don't know of another agency. I spent a day up in Washington a couple weeks ago. I was asked to come up and meet with a bunch of federal partners on that. We have about 28 million images enrolled in our facial recognition system, and it's a very powerful system that allows us to identify people who play what we call the name game with us. When they tell us their name is Joe Smith, but it's really not, and they're trying to play that game. And we've pioneered it here in Pinellas County, and again, we have the largest system. We're committed to technology. And I can tell you that what I'm very committed to in the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office is making sure that we have the absolute highest level of accountability, that we run the agency in the most cost-effective, most efficient way that we can, and that our people realize that they're there to serve, and that serving is a right, it's not a privilege. It's something that they need to know where their responsibility lies, and that everybody is doing everything that they can to support that mission. And I think we're making great progress with a number of things that we're doing. We still got a ways to go as far as overcoming some of the things that we had to with the economic downturn. But again, things are getting better. Things are looking up. So that's kind of an overview. There are some hot topics. One of them I'll talk. How much time do I have left, Bob?
5 minutes.
Okay. Well, one of them, I hope somebody will ask, but if not, I'm going to throw it out there anyway, so I'll just take this one off the table. It has to do with the issue of red light cameras. I am 100% opposed to red light cameras. I don't like them. I think they're done for the wrong reason. And I really believe and have a very strongly held belief that traffic enforcement can be just as effective with the warnings as it can with citations and causing people to pay significant amounts of money, is that traffic enforcement needs to be done for public safety reasons. And if a decision is made to issue a ticket to somebody, it needs to be done based upon dialogue between the citizen, violator, and the officer. And a lot of environmental factors need to come into play. The officer needs to consider the type of driving involved, needs to consider the factors of weather, needs to consider whether it's aggressive driving, needs to consider the driver's attitude and whether they accept responsibility for their actions, needs to consider the driver's history. If you have somebody that has absolutely no citations and they're a safe driver and they have no warnings, that's a big difference than the person who's driving down the road at 5 o'clock, weaving in and out of traffic, almost causes a wreck, has got a bad attitude about it, and has 4 tickets and 3 warnings in the last 6 months. Guess what? They need to pay up. Okay? So it needs to be a good decision. This is not a gotcha situation. This should not be a situation where somebody's sitting there in front of a TV monitor or a computer screen, and you got a line in the road, and the car comes up, and whoops, it goes from yellow to red, and the person's wheels touch the line. Up, now you got to pay $158. To me, that's not public safety. That's not good law enforcement, and I'm totally opposed to red light cameras. Now, with that said, you won't see any in the unincorporated area. I had some discussions, and I've been asked that in the past from county commissioners about whether you know we wanted to do that, and back when you had to have an ordinance. And I said I don't support it, and I won't, and the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office won't do it. But so I need to tell you this, though. Because you will see red light, and you do see red light cameras in two cities that we do police, in Oldsmar and in South Pasadena. Remember, there's 24 cities in Pinellas County. 13 of them contract with us to be their police provider. So my position on that is that I don't set the policy for those cities. The city commissions, the city councils, and those individual cities, they get to set the policies in their cities. They pay us to be their police provider. So we do enforce red light camera violations under the contract that we have with South Pasadena and with Oldsmar. If I was making the decision, they wouldn't be there. But I don't make the decision in those cities, and they do pay us to be their police provider. I ask our deputies to try and use good discretion and good judgment as they're evaluating those red light violations. But again, I don't support them. I think it's something that we can do without, and we can put resources at effective traffic enforcement without it being a gotcha situation. So that's a topic that usually comes up. There's differing views on it, some hotly debated views on it, but that's my view on it, which is probably not the view that you're going to hear from most law enforcement people. But that's my view of that. So why don't we open up to questions? Yep.
You get 2 minutes to respond to questions, and again, frame them as a question, 45 seconds. Thank you. And your name. And your name.
Jeff.
Ron.
General, as a professional law enforcement officer, would you comment on current politics in St. Petersburg, where a former chief, Joe Davis, is saying that the mayor and the chief of police there do not know how to pursue properly and are too aggressive, and do not know how to develop the proper relationship between police and the black community? I'm not asking you to take a side, but I'm asking you if you see things that you could counsel them on that would change or sort of pacify these sharply separate views.
Well, of course, the views are politically driven, of course. I think that St. Pete's pursuit policy is a sound policy. It's not inconsistent with what most law enforcement agencies have, and it's got a lot of safeguards built into it. It's not much different than our policy. But like with any policy, it's how it's implemented. I don't have really firsthand knowledge. I can tell you that in the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, our pursuits have dropped off dramatically in the last year. We have a pursuit review board. We review every single pursuit, and if it's not in compliance, it goes over to Internal Affairs and it's investigated. I can only speak from my perspective as far as pursuits are concerned, and this is my perspective on it. And this is what I tell our deputies, this is what I tell our supervisors, and this is the way I expect them to be done, is that it better be worth it. And put yourself in a position of 3 o'clock in the morning and going knocking on that door, and that mother and father come to the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they see you standing there, and you tell them their 16-year-old was just killed because she was T-boned at an intersection by somebody that a cop was chasing, and they ask you why. And it better be worth it. It better not be for tinted windows. It better not been because they were just speeding. It better not be because they ticked off the cops. It better not be because of some property crime. It better be for something that when you tell them that their 16-year-old is dead because they got T-boned by somebody the cops were chasing, that it was worth it. And if not, we shouldn't be chasing. And so I also think that the people out there that do run from the police need to know that we will chase under the right circumstances. And it really comes down to supervisors and management instilling the right message, making the right decisions, and not being afraid to call them off or disengage the pursuit at the right time. As far as the community is concerned, I'm a big believer in good relationships and liaison in explaining our things and explaining it to the community. So I think the relationships are very important.
Yeah. I'm Gregory Wilson. The camel's nose is a little bit under the tent, but there's a difference between contract and consolidation. Do you believe that the citizens of Pinellas County would one day be better served by consolidated law enforcement under one agency? Maybe not all 24 cities, but something certainly approaching that.
The simple answer is yes, but it'll never happen. There's three things that I know, and you can apply this to consolidation or you can apply it to contracting, is that anybody who contracts with us is going to save a buku amount of money. They're going to save big bucks just from an economies of scale perspective. They're going to get as good or better services than what they have right now. And the third thing that I know for sure is the first two aren't going to drive the decision. It's going to be a decision that is driven based upon emotion, sometimes misinformation, and sometimes politics. But here's an example of it, and this is Kansas City is a good example of it. Kansas City, that the whole budget for the town of Kansas City is about $2 million a year. About $1.2 million of it goes to operating their police department. Okay, they asked us for a proposal, and we told them that we could do policing in Kansas City at the same level and really, frankly, higher level than what they have right now for less than $400,000 a year. So do the math. Is that $400,000 a year or $1.2 million a year? They said, no, thank you, go away. So St. Pete Beach, we just contracted with them in January. Annual savings to St. Pete Beach is $2.5 million a year. And everything that I've heard from Mayor McFarland, all the commissioners, residents, everybody, they are extremely satisfied. The problem with it is there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of just distorted views that you're not going to get personal service, you're not going to get small town services, etc. That is absolutely not true. You're going to get the same services or better than you're getting now. The city drives the quantity, quality, type of service by the contract. We first got the contract in Bel Air Beach as an example, is that they had it written into the contract that we would deliver the agenda packages from City Hall to the commissioners' homes. We do bank deposits for some of the cities. We'll do the small stuff as long as they're paying for it. So we do house checks and vacation checks and you name it. So the answer is yes, and then I gave you the longer answer.
I'm asking you this question not from a legal or a constitutional perspective, but from a personal point of view. Do you think the sheriff's department and the election of the sheriff should be based on partisan or nonpartisan elections? And if you think it should continue to be partisan, can you tell me how a Republican or a Democratic sheriff would differ in how they enforce the laws?
I actually think the sheriff is a sheriff for all the people. It doesn't matter whether they're Republican, Democrat, or what party they are. It doesn't matter what race, national origin, gender, etc. I actually think that it should be a nonpartisan office. And it is in many counties, even Polk County. And most people don't know that with Grady Judd over there. They think he's this, you know. But actually, it's nonpartisan over in Polk. I do think it should be, and I get that because it doesn't matter at the end of the day, and I don't think it's going to drive who's in the office because you have to be the sheriff for all the people, and it doesn't matter to me whether what somebody's race is, what their sexual orientation is, or all those other issues, I guess, that sometimes are aligned with certain parties. I do think, regardless of what party, I think the sheriff should be very, very fiscally conservative. I think that the sheriff should apply an approach that he or she is spending his or her own money as to how they administer that $230-plus million a year budget of taxpayer dollars. But I also think that we should, Safe Harbor is an example of that, and is that we need to do the right thing by people. And I don't think it matters what political affiliation you have. So. I think in many, many respects, I think it should be a nonpartisan office. Yeah, Ray?
Ray here. You do an excellent job with getting the homeless off the street, giving them an opportunity to step up. But our community still has a problem of homeless who don't want to go anywhere. And so they camp out in alleyways and our parks, which we're having a meeting with the county on to get rid of. It is becoming a place that's getting overrun with homeless who don't want services. Do you have a plan, or is there some legislation or some kind of ordinance that you need to make that our offices more effective?
Well, we just did that. We just are finishing up now a 90-day jail diversion trial program in the jail where we had a lot of people who won't go to Safe Harbor voluntarily. They won't go to any of the other facilities that are out there. And so when they were doing that, they ended up in the jail, and they'd say, take me to jail. I'd rather go to jail. So we created a housing unit in the jail that probably wasn't the most desirable from a standpoint. They didn't have a lot of privileges. They didn't have commissary. They didn't have TV. They didn't have a lot of things. Trying to get them to understand that there is a better way, and you don't get to decide that you get a cot and three free meals a day, and you get to stay with a roof over your head and restroom facilities and just coast and go back out on the street again. And we want you to get services. We want you to break the cycle of homelessness. And we've had great success with it. But what we have found in the last 90 days or so, there's probably in Pinellas County, and it's not a bad number because we've had success, there's about 40 that I'll characterize as very true, hardcore people that we're not reaching. So what's the answer for them? I don't know. We're talking about it, and we're looking at it. But I think we've made a tremendous accomplishment here in the last 90 days with this trial jail diversion program, with the public defender, the courts, the state attorney, our program counselors over there at Safe Harbor. So there is a hardcore group that's left, and I don't have the answers for it. We're going to keep trying different things, but you can't. What's the saying? You know, you can walk them up, but you can't make them drink. And here, it's the same type of thing, you know, where we can't force them to do it, but we don't want them in the jail. We don't want them in the criminal justice system. You don't want them in there because it's costing a tremendous amount of money, and there's a better way. But some of them just want that lifestyle. So it's a tough situation. But this 90-day program, we're looking at it, and we'll continue to look at different ways to deal with it. There's about, by the way, there's about 100,000 people in the Florida Department of Corrections. See, we're housing 100,000 people in state prison. We got 3,000 here in Pinellas. So a lot of people in custody. We need to keep them out. Yeah, Kim.
Hi, thank you for being here. With all the discussion about school safety and shootings in our schools, keeping our students safe, bills filed about teachers carrying weapons, and not one additional dollar provided by the state to the Safe Schools allocation this year. What are your thoughts on teachers and employees carrying weapons? And what are your thoughts on how do you keep our students and employees safe?
I am opposed to teachers carrying weapons. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think that it's not. Teachers need to teach. Law enforcement needs to do its job. You know, pilots don't need to carry guns either, I don't think, in cockpits of airplanes. I think, especially with teachers, you know, when you get yourself into a situation happens, a very stressful environment, you get an active shooter situation, going to the range and qualifying every 6 months or every year is going to be a disaster. So I'm totally opposed to it. And there's so many reasons why that's a bad idea. As far as keeping the schools safe, I'm also not a believer. You know, when it first happened after Sandy Hook, the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, my God, put cops in every school. Well, I don't think that's realistic either. And I think we need to prioritize our resources. I do favor and would support and do everything I can to support it, the hardening of schools from an infrastructure standpoint, and I think there's room to do that. There's some good things that can be done that I don't think, and you all and Renee and the school board are the experts at it, that wouldn't detract from the learning environment. Things such as allowing doors to be closed where somebody can't get in from the outside and can't get into the classroom that's going to keep the kids safe. Taking the windows out of all the doors so you have a solid door. I don't think that detracts. I think there's some things from an infrastructure hardening perspective that we can do and should do. I'm very willing to support public safety in the schools and with the school board and working with everybody, but it needs to be done in a smart way and in a way that's best we can, knowing to be effective. But knee-jerk reactions are not a good thing, and putting a cop in every school or arming teachers and more guns out there with people who I'll say aren't adequately trained and can't be adequately trained and aren't going to train enough is not a good thing. Go.
Hello, my name is Leonard Schmidt, and I want to commend you on your stance on the red light cameras. in your talk, you mentioned facial recognition and doing some cutting stuff in that area.
Right.
When you have your picture taken, it is digitized when you get your driver's license. So my question is, in a few years ago, under public records, a private company was purchasing in en masse all those images. My question is, how are our faces used in the pictures on our driver's license? And, for example, if there's a robbery and a surveillance camera catches that, can you run a match against all the driver's license photos in Pinellas County? If you could just expand on that issue. Thank you.
Yeah, the answer to that is yes. And that we do have access to all of the Department of Highway Safety Motor Vehicles, ID cards, and driver's license images. So we are not, and I think this is an important clarification, we are not collecting random images of people as they're driving down the street or walking down the sidewalk or going into any building. The only time that we do any comparison is we have somebody who's a suspect in a crime and they've done something, then we compare them to the database. So what's in the database? Booking photos from the sheriff's office, booking photos from other sheriff's offices around Florida, booking photos from the Department of Corrections and the Department of Highway and Safety Motor Vehicles, driver's licenses and ID cards. So that's all that's in the database, and the only time we do a comparison is if it's in an investigation of a crime, taking an unknown photo from like a bank robbery or somebody who's lying about their identity and comparing it to that. So it's not random collection of images. You probably heard years ago, like over in Ybor on 7th Avenue, I think Tampa had some cameras and they were capturing people's images and running them. We don't do any of that stuff. We used to have them at St. Pete Clearwater Airport. We took them out. I don't think that's something that we should be doing as law enforcement. I think it needs to be done as an investigative tool. And it is a great investigative tool when a crime's been committed. Yeah, Audrey.
Audrey Greenberg. PTSD is recognized more now than ever with our military veterans. What programs do you have in place in the sheriff's office for the road deputies, not just for them, but for detention deputies? And you've got so much staff dealing with aberrant behaviors.
Well, we've had for a long time a psychological services coordinator within the sheriff's office to help all employees and returning deputies who have gone on military service. We have general orders in place and policies in place that help them when they're leaving, help their families when they're gone, and help them re-enter when they do come back. We have an employee assistance program. So I think we're doing everything that we can to help them when they do come back from their deployments and they come back from. We have a lot of people, as you'd imagine, that are on reserve status with all the branches of service. So that psychological services coordinator position, in fact, it just opened again. The person that was in it just left us to go work for Largo Medical Center in a behavioral health field. So actually we're now looking for somebody. So, but it was filled for a long time. We had a lot of stability in the program. So we're aware of that issue and we do everything we can to help them. And again, we have good policies in place on that.
This will be one last question.
Sorry. You got a
Pat Wheeler. These outstanding warrants, number of outstanding warrants, can you tell us, those are people that you know you have a name and a face, but you can't find them, and they're like violated probation, or did they are they bank robbers you identified, or some kind of, can you tell me, get a little background on that?
All the above. It's everybody that's got an outstanding warrant because City Police Department gave them a citation for walking their dog without a leash to somebody that's committed murders. It's the whole gamut. The majority of them, though, the absolute majority of them are misdemeanor warrants. Probably down to right now, probably about 10,000 felony warrants. And the majority of those are older. And they were issued like 10 years ago or more. So it really does run the gamut. And what the Violent Offender Warrant Unit is focusing on now are those that are the most recent and of the violent crimes. So a lot of them are not the type of warrants you'd be concerned about. And if we looked at the absolute majority of them, they make up two categories, worthless checks and traffic charges. That's the majority of them. Okay. What's that? Is that one of the young tigers? Can we take one from one of the young tigers?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Coming from the Students for Safety that wants to have a profession in the criminal justice field,
How does the background of being an attorney help you beat the sheriff?
It actually does quite a bit. It short circuits a lot because I don't have to go and ask people a lot of questions about a lot of things. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're a big place. And when I say that we have a budget that tops about $230 million a year, what goes with that is tons of contracts, tons of business relationships, and a lot of business dealings. So there's a lot of things that come across my plate. I know that when I was the chief deputy before, I know the sheriff would come to me and ask a lot of questions about a lot of things because he had to. He didn't have that background. So I actually can short-circuit a lot of it, and having a law background is very helpful. Very few sheriffs in Florida are. There's only one other one that I know of. He's over on the East Coast. Sheriff Dean, who was up in Marion County, who just retired, he was a lawyer. But very few are. But I think it's a tremendous asset because, I can make a lot of decisions and get things done without having to go ask others a lot of questions, especially when it comes to the business dealings within the sheriff's office. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
So I guess lawyer jokes are off limits in the department and office. But Mug for putting up with the
no problem.
Tigers.
Thank you very much.
Just a reminder, Thursday, November 7th, Adam Smith of the Tampa Bay Times and Al Rochelle of Bay News 9 will be at the St. Pete Yacht Club. And Friday, December 6th, Congressman Kathy Castor will provide a congressional update for our annual lunch meeting and Board of Elections. And now the Fang and Claw winner. Kim Black.
You've been listening to a live broadcast from the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club. Meeting today at the St. Petersburg Clearwater Marriott Hotel on Roosevelt. Our luncheon speaker today was the Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gilterry. And this program came to you live on RadioSt.Pete.com, part of our continuing series of live broadcasts from the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club. Today's broadcast will be archived later today and available for on-demand listening on RadioSt.Pete.com from our homepage at the top of the page in the audio archive. This has been a live public affairs presentation from RadioSt.Pete.com. This is Joe Bordeaux wishing you a very good afternoon from St. Petersburg, Florida.